Okay, we got Steve with a no and Chris with a yes. Anyone else?
Bob with a yes.
Okay, I got Bob with a yes, and it was a double. Who was the other person who said question? Okay, after Chris, who else signed in?
As Kilo Charlie 2, Quebec X-ray Mike with question.
Okay. Well, Rick, back then with no. Mel with a and absolutely. Out of curiosity, do we have Paul tonight? WS2N, or is he a football watcher?
This is KC2 QIW.
KC2 QIW. Your audio is quite low. And tell me your name and a yes or a no, sir.
Yeah, this is KC2 QIW. The name here is Joe. Yes and no.
I understand. Okay. Let's get started. Rich, what's the latest in Whitestone and how things going in your neighborhood? N2EO, K2RIW on the TechNet.
Okay, Dick, N2EO. Why don't you pick up Bob, PNJ, or one of the other fellas, and put me on in the middle, Dick, because I'm always getting in here first. Give somebody else a chance to be first on the runway. Okay, Dick?
Fine, with gratitude. Okay. Bob, W2PNJ. I'm going to have a question for you with reference to electrical wiring, but go ahead with your question if you've got one, Bob.
Okay, K2YW, W2PNJ. I just acquired a new Dell laptop computer. I have a wireless mouse with it. Of course, I want to use it in conjunction with my ham radio station. Am I going to have a trouble with interference with regard to using that wireless mouse? I haven't tried it yet. You know, I'm a little leery, but I just wondered if using it, you know, during transmission, if I'm going to have a problem or put a smoke sensor. W2PNJ.
Very fine, Bob. I think the answer is probably not. Wireless mice, I believe, are usually using a Bluetooth technique. Bluetooth is a kind of packet transmission that takes place between your mouse with its battery-operated bursting transmitter, and that's operating on 2.4 gigahertz, I think it is, 2.2, 2.4 gigahertz in that region. My guess is your ham radio puts out very little energy on that band. If you happen to be a 2.3, 2304 ham radio operator...
Infar Dick.
Say again?
Some of the cheaper ones use 27 megacycles, believe it or not, N2YJC.
N2YJC. Start up with your name, sir.
The name here is Lou. I know it's been a while since I checked in. Go ahead.
Okay. How many of them are on 27 megs, Lou? And are we talking about the $50 price range for the... for the 27 megs and $75 price range for the 2 gigs? If you happen to know a simple way of differentiating the two, how would Bob know which one he's got? Over to you, Lou.
It should say right on the box. The cheaper ones, the 30, 25, 30, 40 bucks. I've seen, in fact, believe it or not, I got two in the house. Both of my kids went out and bought wireless mice, and they both happen to be 27 megacycles, so when 10 meter starts to roll around again, I'm sure there's going to be issues. But the much more expensive ones are, actually, I don't know if I know of any that are 2.4 gig in that neighborhood, but they tend to follow the RC frequencies up the band, Dick.
Now, most radio control model aircraft, boats, planes, and whatever, are around the 70 megacycle band. I guess it's possible to be used there. When it comes to our license-free bands, we got 27 meg, 70 megs, and I think the next license-free band above that is around 2 gigs. Is there one in between? That's question number one, if you happen to know, Lou. Second of all, when it comes to wireless things, You've got the Bluetooth mode, and you've got something called Zigbee mode. I guess I don't know what's the difference between Bluetooth and Zigbee and what frequencies they're on. If you happen to have any of that information, pull it on to us, Lou. N2IJC, K2RIW in the TechNet.
Yeah, okay, Dick. Unfortunately, I'm not that familiar with Bluetooth technology. The only reason why I know about these mice is a couple of people at work have bought them and had some difficulties, and I helped them out a bit. And then again, when I learned about 27 megacycles, I went and looked at which two, which ones my children have, and they're both 27 megacycles. Extremely short range, obviously. They, believe it or not, they don't interfere with each other, a bedroom apart from each other. But, like I said, I'm sure I'm gonna have issues, once 10 meters starts opening up. And you forgot 49 megacycles. I believe that's another license-free area for RC-type stuff. Dick?
That's who we go, Dick.
Yeah, Rich recognized another person. Yeah, 49 megas, I think, is also being used for cordless phones. Before we leave you, though, Lou, you said you had a little bit of trouble with some of your friends who had 27 meg wireless mice. Was the problem because of the way they set it up? By the way, you said you saw no interference one bedroom away. I think it's possible that there's more than one code being used at 27 megs, more than one frequency, more than one code, and that could be creating some of the separation. Another question I have for you, Lou, is anyone ever, to your knowledge, really experienced electromagnetic interference? In other words, a guy was using a citizen band radio or a 10-meter ham radio, and in that presence it didn't work. I think there's a good chance that it would work in the presence of most other pieces of electronics. Let's see if you've got any confirmation of that, Lou. And 2YJC, K2RIW.
Grabbed the wrong mic. Yeah, now that you're asking the questions, I wish I would have tried a couple of transmissions on 10 meters, or for that matter, citizens band, just to see if it would interfere with the mice in this house. But unfortunately, I didn't try it. I figured, let me cross that bridge when I get to it kind of thing. And if the couple of people at work just had, they were having difficulties because they, it was an installation issue, let me put it that way. And I just happened to notice that one of them was 27 megacycles because it had set on the box. And the one time I was in, I don't know, Circuit City or one of those places, I just happened to look at the boxes, and most of them that they sell on the cheapy market are 27 megacycles, which sort of surprised me. I like to think either 2.4 gig or, you know, one of the cordless phone frequencies. But I'm not sure why they chose that, but there you have it. Dick, Kate?
W2PNJ.
Okay, Bob recognized. Rich was before you. Rich, N2EO, you had a comment on this. Go ahead, Rich.
Yeah, Dick, I've used wireless keyboards as well as wireless mice. A lot of them do work on 27 megahertz. Haven't been working 10 meters because, you know, the band hasn't been very good. But I can tell you, running tons of power on 20 meters, 75 meters, no problem. Occasionally I might lock up a computer, but there's no damage. Bob asked if he was going to smoke something. Absolutely, definitely not. Worst case, he might lock up a keyboard until he releases the carrier. But even that's, at least on 20 and 75, it's only a minor annoyance.
Okay. There's also a version of the wireless mouse that I've seen where it doesn't even have to be used against a table. You sort of pull the trigger and move it in three-dimensional space, and it recognizes the motion of your hand, and it moves the pointer on the screen accordingly. I've seen one of those. They're kind of cute. If anyone has any experience with one of those, let me know about it. Bob, you have some further questions or comments? W2PNJ, K2LIW in the tech net.
Okay, Dick. Bob, W2PNJ. It's a Razer brand, R-A-Z-E-R. GoClick Mobile, it says on it. Bluetooth technology. And it says it's a... hold on here. It doesn't give the frequency. It just says Bluetooth 2.0 with adaptive frequency hopping. There's no frequency indication, and the brand is a Razer.
Okay, the fact that they said frequency hopping, there's another license free band at 902 to 928 megs, and there, if you radiate more than approximately 1 milliwatt, it's actually rated in milliwatts per square centimeter, or a certain number of volts per meter measured at 3 meters, but it comes out around a milliwatt. If you radiate more than a milliwatt, you have to frequency hop every few milliseconds across the whole region from 902 to 928 megacycles. If you're below a milliwatt, you consider any one frequency if you want to. So it could be using that frequency mode, that particular license free band, which contains a number of cordless phones and other items like that. So if it's on 900 megs, if it's on 2 gigs, I think the chances of you running into ham radio problems are very slim. Even if it's on 27 megs, and where good old Rich has run a whole lot of steam on 20 meters, which is half the frequency, so to speak, if the thing is reasonably well designed, and because it's working for such short range means you're getting very little inverse square law loss between the transmitter and the receiver. Therefore, they can make a fairly insensitive receiver, a reasonably low-power transmitter. It can run quite a long period of time on its penlight cells, and can be fairly invulnerable if it was well-designed. So even on 27 megs, I wouldn't worry. I think it's not going to explode. It's not going to go up in smoke. The worst that will happen is you'll get some phony indication on screen if your ham radio is giving interference to it. I'll bet you there's a 90% chance you'll find out there is nothing to worry about there, Bob. I'm going to back to you, Bob, for any further comments. Drag your feet a little bit in case someone wants to put in their experience with a wireless mouse, particularly one using Bluetooth mode. Razer ProClip Mobile Bluetooth mode wireless mouse. W2PNJ with a little delay. K2LIW in the TechNet.
Yeah, real quick, I just looked up on the internet. According to this particular website I'm on, they use 2.4 gig for Bluetooth and 2YJC. Back to that.
Lou, do you believe when the word Bluetooth is there, automatically it's 2.4 gigs and Bluetooth is not used on any other frequency? Is that sort of your understanding, Lou? Go ahead.
Well, without reading this this article, I just typed in Bluetooth frequency, and then I typed in Bluetooth interference, and they both came up with 2.402 gig. I didn't read either one of the articles. I just figured, let me just look at another one, Dickhead.
Okay, if you find out anything more, let us know about that, Lou. The total number of wireless frequencies, wireless modes, protocols, and hardware that's becoming available is becoming quite significant. Looks like the American public wants everything to be wireless. We don't want to have wires and plugs and connectors all over the place. So right now we're going for wireless mouse. There's a version, as I said before, I've seen where the wireless mouse, you hold it as a trigger device in free space, and you wave it around as you pull the trigger, and it does things on the screen. Fascinating thing to watch. It's going to be a short period of time before we demand a wireless display device. The computer is always going to be plugged into the wall because it uses a good fraction of a kilowatt of power. You're not going to run it on batteries. And I suspect that the display device will always be plugged in, but it won't require a wire between the computer and the display device. I guess you could have the computer tucked under the desk, a wireless mouse on the desk, a flat-screen display device against the wall behind the desk, and only one wire going to the display device just to give it 110-volt power, 120-volt power. I see that as a possibility. I guess we're going to go a little bit slower on the wireless display because a full high-definition wireless display has a hell of a lot of data going through it, going to it, and as such, to do that wirelessly with serial data is a little bit of a problem to get it to operate at the right rate. So maybe I'm over-anticipating when I talk about a wireless display device. Although, there are some techniques that are being used right now for high-def television. One of the things that's kind of amazing is that high-definition television starts off at the studio where the information content in the picture is 270 megacycles wide. 270 megacycles, or is it megabytes or bits per second, is the actual raw data at the studio. By way of MPEG-3 or something like that, video compression, by way of careful filtering, by way of the 8VSB protocol that's used for high-def television over-the-air transmission, by the time you squeeze it all down to 6 megacycles with the video compression techniques and with the MPEG, only certain portions of the screen are being updated, you're getting most of the resolution of a 2.7 270 megacycle wide picture, but it's all being squeezed into 6.0 megacycles of the individual channels. So over-the-air broadcast high-def television, which becomes the law, I think it's February 9th of 2009, essentially all NTSC, old-fashioned analog television, will, by FCC rule, cease to exist. And I think it's February 9th, 2009. And most of the television we'll be watching after that, of the 1,800 broadcast stations that exist in the United States, most of them will be on UHF television. 50 of those broadcast centers have already been designated as using low-band VHF, in other words, channel 2 through 5. Only 50 of the 1,800 will remain on those frequencies. And I think it's mostly in particular areas where the people in that area have no other coverage. So, television's about to change a whole lot. And with anybody with any further questions or comments on this subject, give me a call, let us right now. HURIWMTechNet. I'll bet you there's a good number of guys out there right now who have recently invested in a high-def television, hopefully a very large screen that fills up the wall of their living room. All of their buddies are invited over. They're all consuming beer and chips and whatever while watching that Super Bowl. That's quite an event among some people. There are people who look forward to that. I think I've heard tell that the average ticket to be at the game in Arizona is something like $2,000. The average ticket, $2,000. Those are enthusiasts. Wow. Okay. Steve said he didn't have a question. Chris, I think, said he did have a question. KC2RGW, you got it, Chris. K2RIW, my name is Dick.
KB2MR with a question about the digital TV.
Yeah, thanks. You want me to get it or you want the other station to take it?
Yeah, before we leave that subject, give me a call letters again. That was kind of fast. I think it was KB2ML or something like that. Give me the call letters and your name and then proceed with your question on high-def television. Go ahead.
It's a Kilo Bravo 2 Mike Alpha Romeo. Name here is Gabe. And basically I'd like to know, next year, February 2009, people who have analog sets will have to get a digital analog converter box. Is that true?
Absolutely, positively, Gabe. All analog television will cease to exist February 9th, 2009. That's gone close to 1 year from today. Your ordinary television set will give you nothing but a white screen. Now, when it comes to the converter box you can add to the top of the set, there is a way by which you can get subsidy on that. One or two of those boxes are allowed to be purchased by you with, I think it's a $50 rebate if you apply, if you supply the right information that you're unwilling or unable, or, yeah, unwilling, I guess, is good enough, to buy one of the new high-def televisions, which I guess are close to $1,000 for a good size one with all the goods, with all the horns and whistles inside, and you can easily spend more than that. If you're saying, hey, I'm unwilling to do this, and I bought a perfectly good old-fashioned analog television, NTSC as it's called, National Television Selection Committee. That's what NTSC stands for. I think you can apply, and I believe you can do it over a website. You can apply for this $50 rebate on the converter box. I've been told the converter box is going to cost something like $75 per copy. And then with that, you start watching digital television and or high-def television, although your particular old-fashioned analog set will not give you a high-def display. It'll give you the analog equivalent of a high-def display. And for many people, that's good enough. One other advantage of digital television is that you could have as many as three, and I think it's even possible for four programs to be on the same channel. You could be watching channel 13-1, 13-2, and 13-3. You'd be on channel 13, but you're getting program stream number 1, 2, or 3. You may be watching Nova on one and Wild Kingdom on another and so on. So that's some of the advantages you're going to get with digital television. And then when we all upgrade to high-def digital television with that wider screen format, 16 by 9, we're going to be watching something that looks a lot more like, I guess, Panavision or whatever, you know, the widescreen movies. And it's going to have almost the resolution of a 35-millimeter slide. If you've ever seen high-def television, it is awfully attractive. Back to you, Gabe. KB2MGR, I think it is. K2RIW in the TechNet.
Hey, brother, that's Mike Alpha Romeo. Let me see what else I'm going to say here. The channels that one would get, maybe you won't know this, but normally we get 2 to 13 and UHF from 14 to 68. Now, when you're paying for that little box there, I wonder if you're going to get more channels than you would originally get with your analog setup. Would they give you more?
There's sort of a yes and a no to that one, Dave. What the FCC did starting a couple of years ago is each major television studio broadcast center was given another, usually UHF channel, free of charge. However, there's a catch. They had to use it or lose it. They had to start setting up for high-def television broadcast on the new UHF channel they were given. Right now, in the metro area of New York City, I hear people claiming numbers like 25 channels over-the-air broadcast is possible. I'm not sure of the exact number, but it's a big number. So there's a lot of channels out there. In fact, I did a survey about 2 weeks ago. I connected a short piece of wire about 8 inches long into a preamplifier, into a spectrum analyzer, just to see what there was. And I scanned across all of the VHF, UHF channels. And I think I measured something like 30 channels. I didn't say I'm going to get each one strong enough to get a good picture, but I did see something like 30 channels. The vast majority of them were high-def television. The reason you can tell high-def television on a spectrum analyzer is that as a spectrum analyzer display, high-def television signal has an appearance they call Bart's head, like a Bart Simpson's haircut. They call it Bart's head. In other words, the channel begins at the low end of the 6 megs bandwidth. You see the amount of power rise. It looks like a random noise signal. That's exactly 6 megacycles wide, and 6 megacycles higher up than the low end, it abruptly stops. They got very precise filtering. And so the old-fashioned analog television, 1.25 megs in from the low end, you saw the video carrier. You saw the sidebands of the video modulation. 4.5 megs above the video channel, you saw the audio FM carrier. And if you look carefully enough, 3.5 megs above the video, you saw the chrominant subcarrier. So you saw very specific carriers with NTSC, old-fashioned analog television. With digital television, all you see is this Bart's head, as they call it, Bart Simpson's haircut type stuff. All right, I counted all the Bart Simpson's haircuts, and I guess I saw, as I said, a good number of them. So the good news is that if you live in the New York metro area, there's a lot of channels available. A lot of them are coming from the Empire State Building. Some of them are coming from New Jersey. Some of them are coming from Connecticut. Some of them are coming from Long Island. That's the good news. When it comes to so-called strong signal area and fringe area, the area of coverage by a high-def television signal is close to, but not exactly equal, to the area of coverage you had with analog television. In the case of analog television, if you connected it to a set of rabbit ears at the top of your car, and you started driving down the Long Island Expressway heading for Riverhead. As you got further and further away from the Empire State Building, if that's the channel you were watching, the picture would eventually start getting snowy. So you can still watch the picture, but it starts getting snowy on analog television. On digital television, you start off at New York City, you get a beautiful picture, you start driving toward Riverhead, and at some particular spot, the picture freezes. The way digital television works is that it isn't that you get a good picture or a bad picture. You get a good picture or no picture. It's got an extremely sharp threshold of a small fraction of one decibel between good picture and no picture. So if the digital demodulator has enough signal with the right amount of multipath in there that's not too severe, and depending on the quality of your particular receiver, there's a built-in equalizer circuit which looks at the number of multipath signals and somehow combines them all just right. It's got a digital delay line with a bunch of taps, and it adjusts the amplitudes and the phase.
EOS lockup detect.
It looks at the individual multipath signals. It calculates how strong each one is. Therefore, it figures out how many taps with what kind of polarity and what kind of amplitude of delay will bring it all back together again. So the receiver reconstructs one signal out of the multipath signal you're really getting, and that gives it a number of decibels of threshold extension. So you can be in a pretty weak area, and as long as you're getting a reasonable number of multipath signals, a reasonable amplitude, a well-designed, modern-day digital TV.
Node number 4478, link clear.
A modern-day receiver will eventually put that all back together for you, and you'll get close to the same range you had before for what you and I would call grade A area. And then the so-called grade B area and fringe area with digital television doesn't exist. If you're willing to put an outdoor antenna on the chimney of your house, you're going to have a lot of television to watch, in my opinion, particularly if you've got a rotatable antenna. If you've got cable television, now you get into a sticky area, because
an error has occurred. EOS lockup detect.
In order to get all of the bandwidth correctly transmitted down, old-fashioned coaxial cable TV with high definition represents a little bit of a problem. The number of channels there and the quality of those channels, I'm hearing mixed results, and maybe the whole system is going through some growing pains. When you go over to the fiber-type television, yes, lots of high-def television is there. When you go over to satellite reception high-def television, I have the impression lots of channels are there, although I think they're premium.
An error has occurred.
I think
EOS lockup detect.
I think they are premium, and I think you have to pay for them when it comes to high-definition satellite reception. For people who just love RF and wireless hardware, to put up an outside antenna on the chimney of the house or on the tower is, in my opinion, a worthwhile thing to do. Free of charge, you're going to get a whole lot of channels. Unless you live in a very deep hole and the house is buried in a forest of trees and you're the wrong number of miles from the broadcast center where the trees are giving you all that absorption. But for a person like yourself, Gabe, who's willing to install some hardware, I think you're going to find there's a lot more high-def television channels over the air to watch. And when I say high-def television channels, I mean two things. Hard channels, in other words, the number of 6-megacycle channels you can watch is going to be greater. And second of all, each one of those channels is going to have 2, 3, or 4 programs on them. So altogether, you're going to get a lot of over-the-air channels to watch. KB2 MAR, KQYW, you got it, Gabe.
KQY.
That will recognize. Get to you in a second. Go ahead, Gabe.
Another question I have regarding multipath. How much multipath can that setup tolerate for you to get a good digital picture without getting it like fading in and out, like another on and off picture? You know what I'm saying?
I sure can. To my knowledge, the modern day sets now, the best ones, can tolerate 3 major multipath signals simultaneously. The old criteria used to be 0 to 25 microseconds of delay. The newer ones now are something like plus and minus 50 microseconds of multipath compensation. filtering or whatever you're going to call it, or reconstituting of the signal, particularly if your antenna has a little bit of intelligence to it. Now, what do I mean by intelligence? They make a series of antennas that are rabbit ear-like, but they're not really rabbit ears. You can connect on top of the set, and some of those things have multiple antennas inside that are aimed at different directions, and the set will give commands to the antenna through its cable, which makes it steer the signal for the desirable number of multipaths and the desirable signal strength. So there are kinds of antennas you can buy that are compatible with kinds of digital televisions you can buy, where the rabbit ear light thing on top of the set will tune itself for the right direction of reception with the right amplitude of the multipath. I call it the intelligent antenna. Not quite as good as a rooftop antenna, but for a person who's unwilling to install a rooftop antenna, it's got a lot going for it. There are websites you can go to now that where companies are starting to advertise what I call intelligent antennas. I've been talking to some people on that particular subject just this week, and I have the impression you ain't seen nothing yet. I have hints of various organizations doing some very serious engineering work on ways of making smart antennas. And the so-called simple rabbit ear-like antenna is getting much more complicated. The one thing I don't like is that I'm willing to set up a set of old-fashioned rabbit ears on top of the set. I'm willing to extend them and contract them and twist them in various directions. And I wish there was a very simple bar chart or signal strength indicator where I could simply tune that rabbit ear and the television set in the tune mode would tell me when I'm getting better or worse. I'm looking for that, and it does not exist. And the reasons I'm being told it doesn't exist is because we're not talking about just simple signal strength, although I wish we were. As you tune that rabbit ear and as you tune that various kinds of antennas you can put inside the house, depending on how you aim it, you're not just looking for signal strength. You're looking for a particular combination of signal strength and multipath that is within the range of what the digital demodulator with its fancy tuning circuit can tolerate. And the bottom line of all that is a certain bit error rate. It's got forward error correcting in the signal, and how hard does the microprocessor and your digital TV demodulator have to work in order to suck that signal out of all that garbage. I wish there was a simple bar chart that would allow you to see that. I think some smart guy is going to come up with one in a matter of time, but to my knowledge, talking to some very smart people at National Association of Broadcasters, apparently that tuning function does not yet exist on anything we can now buy. And in the case of analog television, as you slowly slide the signal strength from a strong signal area toward fringe area, you get a continuous decay of signal quality. When you do the same thing with digital television, you don't know anything has happened until all of a sudden the picture disappears entirely or freezes when you cross the threshold of what it can tolerate. And I'm hearing various numbers of how many dB of carry-to-noise ratio does it need in order to give demodulation. The digital TV can tolerate a weaker signal, but it's doing it in the presence of multipath that it's trying to tune for. As you can tell, it's a kind of a complicated function. Now, you take a guy like Dick and a guy like Mel, who don't watch very much television, and we both don't have high-def television with dinosaurs, and in his town, he's the only guy, in my town, I'm the only guy I can find with a rooftop antenna. Everybody else is on cable. And the cable company thinks that there's something wrong with the guy that lives at this address because he refuses to buy cable television. It's a pride thing. I've got an antenna I can put up on 100 feet of tower. I can watch television from all over the place, either satellite television by the old-fashioned satellite technique or currently analog television. Within my antenna on the tower, I know I'm going to get some darn good digital television from Connecticut, New Jersey, New York, and on a good day, even from Maryland and Delaware. So I'm looking forward to seeing what that's going to be like. And one of these days, real soon, I'm going to have to get a digital television and stop becoming so much of a dinosaur. I'm talking to the people who are doing all this work right now. And in one case, I'm trying to help some of those people. And I don't even own a digital television. So they think my help is going to be a little bit funny, if you know what I mean. Mel, what do you got to say about all this? And I bet you it's going to be a little bit of a while before you bite the bullet and buy a high-def television. KQKUI, KQLIW.
PNJ with a comment.
Bob recognized. Mel first. Go ahead.
Well, you hit it right a nail on the head, Dick. Number one, other than catch a little bit of the news and the weather, I have very little interest in TV except once in a while they do stick something on PBS. That's interesting, but most of it now is repeat, so I'm really not very involved even with that. However, the question is, right now, if you go out to purchase a new TV set, are they all digital? In other words, are they all digital sets? Are they still selling analog sets? And, in other words, what is right now, when you walk into the store, can you find one with that's not a plasma or an LCD, a regular old picture tube set with, a regular CRT flat screen, whatever the heck they are, and are they digital? In other words, is the FCC still permitting them to bring in analog sets into this country, Dick, over?
Kilo Delta 2, Bravo Delta with a comment. Bravo Delta recognized, and you're after Bob. To my knowledge, all normal-sized television sets, I'm going to say normal-sized meaning 25 inches and above, you cannot buy a television today that does not have the digital tuner built in. So digital capability will be there. Whether or not the set can also tolerate analog, I think the answer is in almost all cases yes. And when it comes to the display device, there's a small number of sets you can buy that still have an old-fashioned cathode ray tube. The advantage of the cathode ray tube is still that it has a much higher dynamic range. In other words, the ratio between the blackest black and the brightest white on a cathode ray tube is still far in excess what you can buy with any of these flat screen, liquid crystal display, or plasma displays. That's the good news about what you see. But if you want to say, for instance, a 35 or a 40-inch cathode ray tube set, the cathode ray tube itself weighs something like 150 pounds, just of all the glass that's in it. Takes up a lot of volume and a lot of weight. When you compare that to almost as good a display with the flat screen, liquid crystal, or plasma, or rear projection or front projection display devices, they're pretty darn good. The prices are not very high. The weight is pretty small. The thinness is pretty nice. You can set it up against the wall or put it up on a desktop or whatever. So they're starting to look very, very attractive for non-cathode ray tubes. So that's my understanding. You cannot buy a set without the digital tuner built in, with one slight exception. If you want to buy some tiny little set with a 9-inch picture tube to it, because you're going to hang it under a shelf in the kitchen so you can watch television while you're cooking a meal, I think some of those tiny little sets, you can possibly still buy some of those that are purely analog with no digital tuner built in. But normal size sets, to my knowledge, must have a digital tuner in order to be sold in the United States. That's my understanding. Okay, we got Bob and Bravo Delta in that order. W2PNJ, go ahead, Bob.
Just a different topic. You could put me back in the slot. I have a smoke detector update. Remember a while back I had a problem with it. I just wanted to bring you guys up to date. Okay, just let me know when you're ready.
We sure will. And poor Chris, he thought he was on the runway, and look at all the bypassing he's gotten here. Kilo Delta to Bravo Delta. Start up with your name, sir, and then your comment on television.
Good evening, Dick, K2RW on the TechNet from Kilo Delta 2, Bravo Delta. Name is John. About a year and a half ago, I purchased a high-definition digital television tuner. Been having a lot of fun with it. I thought I'd mention that this particular tuner is a Pro Brand 3150 Plus. It has a bar graph signal strength indicator, which I believe is indicating the quality of the bit error rate of the signal that it's receiving. And I can confirm that I'm generally getting about 20 to 25 channels that work in quote, counting the RF channels plus the so-called virtual channels that are sometimes added onto them. I've been having a lot of fun playing around with antennas right now. Most of what I'm receiving is on UHF. I'm using a 4-bay sort of a bow tie, four bay stacked array in the attic. It's a wine card antenna and a couple of homebrew preamps. I have another Yagi that I built for another channel that's out towards the west. And I aligned these antennas, incidentally, using a handheld receiver, a handheld scanner, an ICOM ICR2, which tunes the UHF range. I put it in a wideband FM mode and connected to the antenna and watched the bar graph signal strength indicator on the handheld receiver for maximum strength, and that seems to work out pretty well. So I'm all set for the conversion. I know some of the stations that are now on UHF will be going down to VHF. I believe channel 7, 11, and 13 will be going back to VHF. The remaining stations will stay on UHF. I believe channel 2, which is on 56 right now, will be going below to some lower channels. They all have to be below 51, or 52, I guess. So 51 would be the highest. So it's going to be an interesting transition. K2RAW and the TechNet from KD2BD.
Very fine. The 3150 plus Pro brand, I think you said Pro branch or something like that, 3150 plus is the model number of your digital tuner box, and it has a bar graph built in. Boy, am I glad to hear that. You live in Seagirt, and that's, as I remember, very eastern New Jersey. I think you're almost on the seashore. Therefore, I believe the number of miles between you and the Empire State Building is a small number. That gives you some pretty strong signals. When you say you've got 20 to 25 channels, are those 20 to 25 hard channels, in other words, 6 megacycle bandwidth, or are you talking about 20 to 25 programs, where some of those channels have 2 or 3 programs per channel? And another question I've got for you, sorry about some dominant questions, John, is this 3150 plus Pro brand, I think it is, converter, roughly how many dollars is that, and is it still available? Over to you, John. Good information. KD2BD, K2RAW and the TechNet.
And K2RAW and the TechNet from KD2BD. You have the name correct, Pro brand. That's kind of an odd name. But I purchased it at a Circuit City a year and a half ago after doing some online research. A lot of the comments that I saw online seemed to indicate that this particular model was a bit more sensitive than others, had some better features than some others, so I took the plunge, and I didn't really regret it too much. I guess I'm getting about, as you would say, 10 hard channels, and the rest are called virtual channels. So my best DX so far has been WGBH in Boston. I picked up other signals from northeastern Pennsylvania, Philadelphia, Providence, Rhode Island, Connecticut, during band openings. I am 45 miles south of the Empire State Building. The antenna is only about 20 feet off the ground. Eventually, it's going to go a lot significantly higher, and at least outside of the area of the inside of the attic. But it works quite well. Actually, you know something? Recently, I did some web surfing, and I found that there's a site where there's discussions with people who are building their own television antennas for high-def reception. I don't have the URL offhand. I think it's a something that's on a website called Lumen Lab, like a light bulb, light output Lumen. LumenLab.com, I believe. Somewhere deep in that website, there's this discussion going on. These people are, it's almost funny to read the comments. People are really into this stuff. They're building antennas. They are buying antennas. They're taking the dimensions of the antennas. They're going online, finding patents for antennas, and trying to duplicate those antennas and compare them with one another to see which ones work best. It's really kind of comical, but these people are really into it. I think that a lot of future hams are on that site. K2RAW and the TechNet from KD2BD.
WB2HWW with a question about this subject.
Howie recognized, and I got a series of questions first. You're on the list, Howie. You haven't told me yet the beautiful information you're giving us here, John. What's the approximate price of that 3150 plus Pro brand? And since you're using that as a converter box in front of your analog television, I am guessing you're still watching medium definition television as opposed to high definition television. You may or may not know there's a company called Hub Hog Computer Works in Hub Hog, Long Island, that sells you a whole series of products. Some of them are little printed circuit cards that you plug into the motherboard of your computer, your desktop computer, and now the display screen on your desktop computer will display high-def television for you. And so they're shipping, from what I'm hearing, they're shipping a lot of those things, so it's a popular product for somebody who doesn't want to, you know, spend the big bucks for the hold-on set. They've already got a very nice display with their computer. So what's the approximate price with this 350 plus that you paid, or what do you think it's selling for now is what I really care about, John. And am I correct in assuming you're watching medium definition television with a digital front end? Over to you, John. KD2BD, K2RIW on the TechNet.
K2RIW on the TechNet from KD2BD. I believe I got this box for $249.99. So in my estimation, it's a little bit more expensive than getting, for example, the receiver that's used for picking up NASA television off the satellite, which is another digital type of receiver, but this was more expensive. Yes, I am looking at everything on a standard definition 4x3 video format. One of the neat things that this box does is that it has a zoom feature. So if the program that you're watching happens to be in 16x9 resolution, this will zoom into the center of it so that the entire screen is filled. You don't have a letterbox effect or anything like that. And a couple other video modes, too, which allow you to see the whole 16x9 squashed into a 4x3, but I generally set it on the zoom mode so that pictures pretty much look normal. And for the most part, that doesn't cause too much of a problem with things overlapping on the edges that you can't see. I will also say that a lot of the so-called standard definition programming that's out there is inferior, in my estimation, to standard definition analog television in terms of resolution. The really high-quality stuff is the Channel 2, which is operating full high definition without any secondary channels. A lot of the other channels that have a 720p format is pretty good. Then it also has some other channels. For example, Channel 4, which I think is on Channel 28 UHF or 26, is, you know, a nice high-quality Channel 4-1 WNBC television HD. And then they have two secondary channels, a weather channel, which is very nice, and then a Channel 4.4, which has even worse resolution. I imagine that's just a result of the compression that they're using. They're compressing those other channels to a higher degree. K2RIW on the TechNet from KD2BD.
Fantastic. By the way, the high-definition television is really changing the way broadcasters set up the studios and the way the personality gets their makeup on. They have to have brand new kinds of makeup that are not so orangey and so obvious. Also, there are ways with the digital formatting that takes place at the studio. When you set up a camera just right, you can have some of the makeup applied electronically as opposed to really putting this goo on your face. And for people who have a mole or some other kind of imperfection on their face, you can digitally program the channel to subtract the mole, and it tracks your face as you move your head around to various locations and rotate your head up and down and left and right and whatever. So there are personalities these days that will carefully set up a camera to maximize the amount of makeup and the amount of blemish removal and the crow's feet removal and the wrinkle removal. They'll set up a camera that way, and then some of these personalities will insist that that camera be used when they are in a studio. So we're starting to ask the question, how much is real and how much is inside the microprocessor? So, and some personalities apparently have quite a bit of pride in their appearance. Maybe it's even beyond pride, if you know what I mean. Howie, I know you had some questions. Go ahead, Howie.
It's not exactly on this subject, but when Channel 2 via analog leaves the air, what will be on 54 to 60? And do you think this is going to help 6 meters so that we get into the next sunspot cycle, we'll build up 6 without killing everybody? I wonder what's going to be chasing to the 6 meter band. Go ahead, Jason.
Yeah, I don't have the exact answer, but I have an approximate answer, Howie. On good authority, last week I was talking to somebody on the inside of National Association of Broadcasters, who told me of the 1,800 total television stations that exist in the United States today. After February 9th, 2009, when all analog television disappears, 50 of those broadcast centers will remain on VHF low band, in other words, channel 2 through 5, or 2 through 6. 50 of those channels, a certain number of them, and I've forgotten the number, are going to be on VHF high, which is channel 7 through 13, and all the rest are all going to be UHF. And I think the number on VHF high is a little bit greater than 50. So it appears to me that channel 50, 54 to 60, our so-called channel 2, in most areas, in metro areas in particular, will still be occupied. But the signal that's going to be sent there is going to be a digital television signal, to my knowledge. There are proposals where in certain areas of the country, the low VHF channels will be traded over to first responders, police, fire, and things like this. But there are certain areas of the country where, for at least for the time being, that trade over will not take place. So we're going to have to do a little bit more research to find out what happens to CBS Channel 2. Maybe somebody in the New York City area, maybe somebody within the sound of our voice already has that information. If so, give us your call letters right now.
Yes, question number two. Is that really going to happen, or do you think they're going to suspend it or delay going over? You don't think there'll be big enough outcry?
Oh, no, they're serious this time, as I can see it, Howie. They are serious. There's been two or three false starts in the past where they declared a hard date in which analog television will disappear. From everything I'm hearing, when you watch C-SPAN or when you talk to the people in broadcast, you go to the Computer Electronics Show, you go to the NAB show, or you talk to the people who have direct FCC connection, I am led to believe that there's a 95% chance that February 9th, 2009, analog television will cease to exist in almost all areas, with very little exception. I think almost no exception. So I think this one's real. Is someone else going to give us some information? If so, give me a call at us right now.
K2KEY.
Now recognized. Was there another person?
Someone else, yeah.
Who is the someone else? Okay, Mel, go ahead with your information or question.
Okay, well, what happened? There was a small little article I get from my local congressman here, Kruger, and he's been inundated already with, we have a lot of, older folks here in the area of Brighton, Sheepshead Bay area, and they're on fixed income. And he said, made a statement that this business of a coupon against the purchase of a box and still going to cost them money is not good enough. That unless they come up with a better answer, in other words, I don't know, supply maybe the box to residents when they present that they're a senior citizen for nothing, or how they're going to do it. But he's going to oppose it until they come up with a better answer for providing these people with reception. he's been, like he says, inundated with the requests like that. So he's got a bit of clout in the Congress, and I have a feeling we're gonna see a bit of a battle royal, and they're gonna have to, like he says, do better than this coupon business and still charge these people. A very hard sell, because, this is something they're getting for nothing all their life, and all of a sudden they're going to have to pay for it. Just like right now, the controversy the mayor has brought up here in New York City, that to travel certain streets in New York, he's going to put a toll on traveling streets during rush hour. And I was interviewed, believe it or not, I was in the city Thursday with the car. As I got to the Brooklyn Bridge, there was an interviewer from Channel 2 that stopped me there with the camera going and everything. He said, what do you think of it, that from here on, with the journey you just made to the bridge, you're going to pay a toll just for that? So I said, forget about it. I said, if he thinks he's ever going to get elected, he puts this through, he can forget about even being elected. He won't get elected as a dog catcher after this. And this is the same analogy that's coming up with this. A lot of their constituents are putting pressure that if you don't do something really about this business with the coupon business or whatever, that you'll never get elected again. They're so up in arms about this in certain areas, Dick, over.
Fascinating information. As I see it, when you watched C-SPAN television, there were special congressional meetings on this exact subject where they brought in front of the committee people who represented National Association of Broadcasters, people who represented specific networks, people who represented companies like Motorola and can't even think of the brand names now, who are capable of making the boxes. They were led to believe a year or so ago that it was possible to build a converter box that you sit on top of the set that would convert your digital television signal over the air into an analog signal you can plug into an ordinary old-fashioned TV. But that box was supposed to cost $50. That may be part of the reason why the coupon you're given is worth $50. However, the latest I'm hearing is that the bottom-of-the-line, bare-bones converter box is something in the vicinity of $75. So therefore, your grandmother who's watching the soap operas on her old-fashioned television is going to have to pay a minimum of $25 extra with the coupon to get this digital box to give her a television back again, so to speak. And so if your congressman is going to be successful with that, he's going to have to supply the extra $25. I'd like to believe somebody is going to come through with a deal like that, Mel. I think you got a good one there. Because it used to be free. Why should we have to pay for it now? This is not the the United Kingdom where they have to pay a tax for watching television. That's the good news. But they have almost no advertising. Are they coming out ahead compared to us? They don't have quite as many channels in the past. However, television in the United Kingdom or in Europe in general is very different than it is in the United States. In the United States, you have a small number of broadcast channels covering a large number of miles. In the most of the European areas, they have a large number of channels all running low power. It's almost like cellular telephones, so to speak. And so in your particular community, you have a whole lot of very local broadcast centers. And the number of miles between you and the nearest broadcast center is very small. And therefore, people who make electronics for European television have a problem of, in some cases, an extra attenuator has to be programmed into the television receiving circuitry so that it can tolerate extremely strong signals, because there may be a broadcast center two blocks away from your house, and instead of giving you a minus 84 dBm signal, it's giving you a minus 20 dBm signal, or even stronger than that. I'm 4 miles from channel 21 television, and on my 432 megacycle ham radio antenna, I remember putting a power meter on there one day and measuring approximately 0 dBm coming out of that antenna, out of my 432 array antenna, when I listened to the channel 21 frequency, which isn't too far above 432 megacycles. But that's another whole story. Anybody with any further questions or comments on digital television, give me a call with us right now, KQRIW and the TechNet.
Yeah, one more thing, Dick, K2KEY.
Go ahead, Mel.
The other part of the question was, if they do supply the box to senior citizens or at no charge, who's going to install them, and what are they going to pay? They don't want to pay for installation. Where are you going to get these installers? They're going to be inundated then with the people that need it to install these many thousands and thousands of boxes. They want to know who's going to do it and what are they going to charge. They want also that covered over.
That one doesn't bother me quite as much, because the degree of difficulty of installing that converter box, I think, is slightly easier than installing a box that gives you digital, that gives you DVD reception or video cassette recorder reception. If you've got an antenna going into your current television set, you literally plug this box in between that antenna and your television set. So it's one goes into, one goes out there, and the 110-volt line plug-in. That doesn't strike me as a big installation. Or maybe I'm misunderstanding this one. Over to you, Mel.
Yeah, well, you take old folks. They couldn't install a VCR in the line. I've done a number of them for people around the area. They don't know from these things. A number of them don't even know how to use the remote control. I got begged by a number of people around.